Hello and welcome to the Giants Flash. I'm Henry Schulman, Giants beat reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle. My guest today is a true Renaissance man of the arts, Ken Levine. Ken is an author and playwright, but he's best known as a sitcom writer, director, and producer. He and partner David Isaacs were the head writers of MASH for a time, while Ken has also been involved in shows such as Cheers, Frasier, The Simpsons, Everybody Loves Raymond, and many others, not to mention two movies that he and David co-wrote. But he's here on the Giant Splash because of a second career as a baseball broadcaster, first working with John Miller in Baltimore before moving on to Seattle, San Diego, and Los Angeles, among other places, where he now lives in L.A. Ken, welcome to the Giant Splash.
Oh, thank you. Great to be here.
Yeah, I called you a Renaissance man of the arts. I always kind of think you're all over the board. I kind of think of you as a very poor man, Steve Martin, minus the banjo. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I've always wanted to be a Benihana chef, but I've never been able to accomplish that. So I do all of that to compensate.
Okay, well, it would scare me if you had a big knife like that. And actually, what I was thinking of doing was just writing a short introduction mentioning nothing but the fact that you co-wrote Mannequin 2 on the Move, and then just
keep
reintroducing you. And here's Ken, here's Ken Levine, the co-writer of Mannequin 2 on the Move, and just forget about everything else.
Throw in Aftermath, too.
Aftermath, that's right. I remember that show. Yeah. I'm one of the three. So we started here with a little laughter. You and I have known each other a long time. When, you know, we get together for our Jewish old man lunches at Nate and Al's when I'm down in L.A., we laugh a lot. That's one of the things we like about each other. This is a tough time for laughter, and I think there's always been a serious question about the appropriateness of comedy, the appropriateness of laughter when you're going through a crisis like this, and we're even going to start the actual podcast with a very serious issue about somebody who is friends to both of us. I want to talk about that at the second half of this podcast, because I think you'd have a great perspective on it, having been a comedy writer now for half a century almost. But I want to start with John Miller. You worked with John, you're friends with John. Did you see the news that yesterday John went on a local radio station here in San Francisco and said that he and his wife Janine are under quarantine because his son and the son's fiance both came down with coronavirus just days after they were with John and Janine? Have you heard that news?
Yeah, I have heard that news. And, you know, it really is starting to get real for everybody. You know, I mean, when it started, well, there were cases in China and you heard about these people in Italy, but all of a sudden, you know, Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson and John Miller might be in danger. And all of a sudden it's like getting closer and closer and getting more and more real. And what I hope that does, and I know John mentioned that on the radio broadcast yesterday, is for people to take this seriously and to self-isolate themselves and to social distance and wash your hands and take whatever precautions are really prescribed, because this really is real. And I think we're now at a point where each and every one of us really has to take care of themselves, not just for ourselves, but for the people that that we love, that we know.
Yeah, and you know Tom Hanks. Obviously, you co-wrote the movie Volunteers. That was one of his vehicles, as I recall.
Mm-hmm. I'm in self-isolation because of that, and that was 1985. I mean, I'm taking no chances.
I was thinking of that. You know, when you mentioned Tom Hanks's name, I think that when he and Rita came out with it, I think that, I mean, they didn't have to tell everybody, and I think. I think there is an obligation among celebrities, or they feel an obligation to come. I think that's why they came out with it, for the very reason you're talking about.
I do too. And both Tom and Rita are such wonderful people that I'm sure part of the reason for them coming out is that it would help other people, that other people would A, start taking it more seriously, and B, see that, you know, it can be managed. You know, I mean, we're hearing certainly all the doom and gloom, and you know, all of the deaths, but that's still a small percentage. Take care of yourself, and if you do come down with it, yeah, you're in for a rough go, but most people will recover.
Yeah, and, you know, just talking about John, you know, John is 68 years old. I believe his wife is about 7 years older, so that makes it scary a little bit. Now, you know, you went from a very successful career in Hollywood into baseball broadcasting, and I believe I'm correct that your first major league job was in Baltimore with John Miller.
Yes.
How did that come about? How did the whole switch come about?
Well, in the mid-80s, I was going through a midlife crisis. I always wanted to be a baseball announcer, and I never pursued it. And now I'm 35 years old, and I had done a show for Mary Tyler Moore, and I had done a lot of other things, and I was starting to go, is that all there is? And ironically, a friend of mine from college who did go the broadcasting route, found himself as a broadcaster for the Giants. How many of you remember David Glass?
Oh, yeah. A lot of our readers remember him. Listeners remember
sure.
him. Yeah.
Sure. Well, so one day I go to Dodger Stadium and I'm going to get together and have drinks with him. And ironically, Dwayne Kuiper after the game, Kuiper was still playing back then. And I see David Glass up there in the booth, and I'm thinking to myself, my God, he did it. He's a big league announcer. And that was really what prompted me to say, if I don't do it now, I never will. And for 2 years, I went to the upper deck of Dodger Stadium and Anaheim Stadium with a tape recorder and just broadcast game after game after game, and eventually sent tapes to the minor leagues and spent a year in Syracuse, which was the Blue Jays AAA affiliate. Then 2 years in Tidewater, which was the Mets AAA affiliate. And I got a tape to John Miller, and I basically just asking him to critique it. And he called me up about a month later saying, hey, this is really good, and we have an opening. Joe Angel was going to leave the Orioles to go to the Yankees. Would I be interested in applying? It's like, yeah. And I sent my tape and was a finalist, and they flew me to Baltimore and spent time with John. And in fact, they put us in a studio together and just had us talk for a while just to get a sense of the chemistry. And I'm thinking, okay, well, there go my chances, because this guy's got this beautiful baritone and sounds like $1 million, and I must sound like Minnie Mouse compared to him. But apparently the contrast worked, and we got along, and I got the job. And boy, you talk about having a mentor to learn and to study from John Miller every day for an entire season was an unbelievable gift.
Now, when you it's this kind of a funny coincidence, or maybe it's not, when you were up there in the upper deck at Dodger Stadium and Angel Stadium doing those broadcasts, were you aware that that's what John Miller did when he was a teenage boy at the Oakland Coliseum?
No, I didn't. I mean, I learned later, but no, because I figured, you know, you can't just do it by turning the sound down on the TV. You know, you don't have the crowd, you don't have the reaction, you need to be able to see things yourself. And like I said, I went to the upper deck, because I figure if somebody is paying big money to go see a ball game and it's maybe only his first or second game of the year, they don't want some idiot sitting next to him going, and there's a line drive down the left field line. No, wait, that's the right field line. So I figure if you go to the upper deck, which was general admission, and the seats weren't reserved, that I could call the game, and if somebody was annoyed, they could just move. And it was great because it was right over home plate. The downside is you're above the timberline, and the players are just ants. But, you know, I'm saying he's got a good late movement on that palm ball. I couldn't see. And what was interesting is, again, I thought, okay, people were just going to avoid me and move away. But I got a series of regulars who would come every night, And they would come and they would sit with me, and I would buy them all a beer, and they brought binoculars, and they were my spotters. They would hand me notes as to who's warming up in the bullpen and stuff like that. So, it's Los Angeles. So, you know, we're so status conscious. These people had their own baseball announcer.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you a little bit more about John Miller, but, you know, you and I have a mutual friend, Josh Sushan. In fact, you and Josh hosted the Dodger Talk show, which was like the post-game call-in show for the Dodgers for a while.
That's right.
And, you know, how often do you tell him that it only took you 2 years in the minors to get a major league job? Because he's been in the minors for about 74 years now.
You know, it's very difficult, and it seems like it is more difficult these days because they're just not bringing up a lot of minor league announcers. And, you know, my heart goes out to him because he deserves a job. I can pinpoint maybe six or seven, because I listen to all these minor league broadcasts on the internet, and there are about six or seven guys who are deserving of a major league job, and they just can't get them.
Yeah.
It's really tough.
Josh is the radio voice of the Albuquerque Isotopes, which I believe are the AAA team of the Rockies, or have been.
Yes.
I actually ran into him at a game in Sacramento. In fact, I recorded a pregame show with him. He had me on. Do you have any good John Miller stories or impressions that I don't mean like Rich Little impressions, but, you know, some John Miller stories?
John does great impressions, and one day before we started, he was at my office at Paramount. I took him to lunch and showed him around the cheer set. And he recorded our voicemail. And he did it as Scully, you know. Look out for the farmer in the deli. You know, and, you know, he did it. So one day, I'm listening to my voice messages, and I hear this familiar voice, and I hear a little laughter, and then I hear the actual Vin Scully go, "You'll hear from my lawyer."
I'm trying to remember the name of the comic, but he does a great routine about that. He does voices as well, and maybe you can get his name, because it's not on the tip of my tongue. And he did Alan Arkin, and has a great story about that. I'll try and look that up on the internet before we're through here, or I'll just cut this out entirely. you also, Kevin Pollak, in fact, it's called, I think his record is actually called Tormenting Alan Arkin, and there's a great story in there about what Kevin did with an answering machine involving Alan Arkin, but neither here nor there. Now, you know, you also worked in Seattle. I mean, you worked, am I correct that you worked with Dave Niehaus, who was, I mean, really?
I have worked with four Hall of Fame announcers.
Wow.
I'll never get in. But, Dave Niehaus was my partner in Seattle, and we had a great time. Dave was a lot of fun. I mean, Dave covered terrible teams for all those years. And he'd say to me, "Kenny, we have to go 2064-0 for me to break even here," you know. We started a bit. We mentioned that Dizzy Dean, who was a great pitcher and then used to call baseball games for CBS on Saturday afternoons, that he would sometimes sing the Wabash Cannonball. And we found the sheet music to the Wabash Cannonball, and David and I sang it one night on the air. Well, what the hell? We're down 11-2 in the third inning. And I said, you know, we should sing this every time the Mariners are down by 10 runs. It got to the point we didn't need the lyric sheet anymore.
That's amazing. Now, you know, people who are listening to this mostly are Giants fans here in the Bay Area. I don't think they understand that Dave Niehaus in Seattle is to Seattle what, you know, Kruk and Kipe are here. And when Dave passed away, you had kind of a unique honor. You were not working for the Mariners anymore, but they decided to, instead of hiring someone right away, they decided to bring back some of the old play-by-play announcers to broadcast in his place. You were one of them, weren't you?
Yep. Yep, I was, and did that for 2 years, and it was a great honor.
And
it was a great honor. I learned, by the way, you cannot do sarcasm on the air, because we were in Detroit, and I mentioned how the Mariners were wearing a patch that year, my oh my, in honor of Dave. And I said, and you know, the other thing that's really heartening is that the Detroit Tigers are also paying tribute to Dave this year. And it's amazing because he never even broadcast in Detroit, but his legend is so great that they're paying tribute to him. If you watch a game and you see a home game in Detroit, you'll notice the Tigers on their uniforms have this great big ornate D on the front of their uniforms, and that's for Dave. Oh my God, the internet, the blogs,
yeah,
they just crushed me. It's like, oh, that idiot, that stands for Detroit, that guy's an idiot.
That's like, yeah, it's like Twitter before its time. One question to end this first segment here with: you mentioned that you'll never get into the Hall of Fame. You have an Emmy Award as a producer for, I believe it was the first season of Cheers. Is that right?
Yes, that's true.
Prime time Emmy Award. Would you trade that for the award that broadcasters get to get into the Hall of Fame?
Sure.
You would? Yeah. Right.
Oh my God! I mean, you know, when. There's some idiots who have won Emmys. There's a lot of clowns who have won Emmys. But if you're in that Hall of Fame and you're there with Vin Scully and John Miller and Bob Costas and Ernie Harwell and Mel Allen and Red Barber and all those guys, you bet. Hank Greenwald deserves to be in it too, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, Alex Pavlovich has an Emmy, I think. But anyway... I have a lot more to ask you. We're going to talk about the Giants and Dodgers rivalry. We're going to talk about Yasiel Puig. And then, of course, as I said, we'll talk a little bit about comedy and trying times. And I'll be back with Ken Levine right after this. Henry Schulman, back with Emmy Award-winning producer, comedy writer, director, playwright, author, blogger, and... you know, much, much more, Ken Levine.
Podcaster.
I do want to mention that Ken has a wonderful podcast that is, it's called Hollywood and Levine. I'm sorry, no, that is the podcast is called Hollywood and Levine. And the blog, which I really enjoy, it's a lot of inside Hollywood stuff where people get to ask questions as well in the comments. That's called By Ken Levine. I have that right?
Yep.
Okay. How many years did you do Dodger Talk, which is, you know, sort of the equivalent of Sports Phone 680 here in San Francisco? How long did you do that?
8 years total.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you didn't pull your eyes out talking to fans for 8 years.
There were times.
Okay.
Although I just viewed it differently, because if I had a fan who was infuriating, I just viewed it as that person being a straight man, you know, because I approached Dodger Talk. I approached these sports talk shows, I think, very differently than everybody else, in that I see it as an entertainment program that happens to be about the Dodgers and happens to be about baseball. Most of these programs I listen to, it's like Dodger Talk for scouts. You know,
right.
And unless you're an absolute hardcore fan, you're going to be bored out of your mind. And, you know, I would work very hard on the reporting aspect of the job and being accurate and talking a lot about the game, etc. But I also had fun with it. And so it sort of helped with the callers. That I could sort of use them as straight men.
And what was your last year doing that program?
2010, because okay. Then I went back to the Mariners for 2 years.
Right, so yeah. That was right about the time the Giants started their, that was the year that the Giants started their run of three championships in 5 years. Now, we have a situation now where the Dodgers are on a major upswing. They've won Seven consecutive division titles. There's no reason to believe they won't win their eighth this year for however long they play the regular season. And Dodgers,
it'll be a three-game season.
A three-game season and a 47-game playoff, yes. And Dodger fans just love to troll Giants fans about how much better the Dodgers have been lately, and that the Giants have fans have the same answer all the time, 1988. And I'm asking you not so much as a former Dodgers, former broadcaster, former Dodgers radio talk show host, but as an Angeleno, you still live in Los Angeles.
Sure.
How annoying is it for Dodger fans that the Giants have these three World Series championships and the Dodgers in the last decade and the Dodgers had none? It sort of takes a little bit away from the trolling, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does. Because for Dodger fans, like you mentioned, they've won the division seven times. Doesn't mean anything. I mean, the fact that they have not won a World Series for years, they couldn't even get into the World Series. And you know, the Tampa Bay Rays are in the World Series, and the Diamondbacks, you know, these expansion teams win the World Series.
Royals.
The Marlins win the World Series. And the Giants win three times. Yeah. Yeah, 1988 goes farther and farther back into the mist, and I think Dodger fans honestly are less concerned with the rivalry per se as just being on upper management and the team to win a World Series already.
And I'm sure everybody believes they would have won the World Series now, knowing what we know about the Astros in 2017, right?
Except me.
Oh, you don't think so?
No, I don't think so, because in Game 2, when Rich Hill was pitching a brilliant game, and the Wile E. Coyotes took him out. And then the Astros caught up. They had to go into extra innings. The Dodgers went into the bullpen, which wasn't very solid, and they lost that game. If Rich Hill pitches into the seventh, eighth inning of that ball game, then the Dodgers have won the first two, and I think it's a very different series.
Right.
So no.
Oh.
But yeah, I hate the Houston Astros with every fiber of my being.
I think a lot of people do. We had an email exchange the other day about some other business, and you responded to one of my emails by saying, you're going to love Yasiel Puig. you mentioned that, he's going to drive, John Miller insane. Like the fourth or fifth time he runs into an out. So tell us.
The same game.
That way you know Ruben Rivera. You know that whole story, right?
Sure.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
That's the worst base running in the history of baseball. That's one of John Miller's greatest lines ever. So there's still some suspicion the Giants are going to sign Yasiel Puig. What should Giants fans expect if that happens?
Well, first of all, they're going to find a very colorful player. You know, Vince Scully called him the wild horse, and he is that. And he's going to give you some thrills. He's going to hit some big home runs. He's going to throw people out at third base from the right field foul pole. He's going to do some amazing things. And then he's going to do some unbelievable bonehead things. When you look at all of the talent, you figure this guy should be better. And three teams now have given up on him, which really says something. You know, it's like, you know, Manny Ramirez without the talent. You know, Manny can be Manny, but Yasiel can't necessarily be Yasiel. You know, I think he's certainly a good ball player. He's just not someone you can count on.
Maybe for a team like the Giants that aren't going anywhere, that need to put people in seats, taking away the fact that they hate him because of Bumgarner, the feud. I mean, that would be a good guy to have in that situation, wouldn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, there's no way to make a smooth transition into this. Henry Schulman talking with Ken Levine, a co-writer of Mannequin 2 on the Move. And also an Emmy Award-winning comedy writer, producer. I do want to get serious here for a second and talk about comedy during tragedy. I mean, having written comedy since the 70s, that you've been through so much stuff that has happened, like the coronavirus, maybe even worse. We're talking about the space shuttle blowing up. You're talking about 9/11. All sorts of things like that. And comedy continued. I mean, comedy shows were produced; they were put on the air. And I think there's a divide. I think between some people who say, "Hey, we need comedy at a time like this to get us going," and the other side, which is saying, "How can you laugh at a time like this?" And I think you're the perfect guy to get a perspective on this.
Well, I do think that laughter is very healing. Look, you don't want to do routines about the coronavirus, but, laughter is a great escape. And you go as far back as the Depression in 1929 and the 1930s and all of the screwball comedies that were so in vogue.
Right.
Because people just wanted that escape. They just wanted a reason to laugh. They wanted some normalcy in their life. And, I believe that comedy writers really provide a service at a time like this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting here writing comedy now, and I'm continuing my blog, and I'm continuing my podcast, and there's going to be levity involved because I think we need it. I really do. If you spend all day watching cable news, you're going to blow your brains out. I think you need that escape. And you know what? Don't feel guilty about it.
Well,
it's like you're not doing anything wrong. The fact that you want to turn off CNN and watch Friends, so what? treat yourself to watching Friends. Treat yourself to watching movies. In my podcast this week, I list 60 comedy movies that I recommend you watch on Netflix or DVD or whatever service you can find them, because I think we need this. I think it's healing. I think it's good for our well-being. Part of the problem of this is the fear and panic and anxiety that we're all feeling. And so to be able to lower that a little bit and to be able to laugh, I think is a godsend.
And I'm not going to do a spoiler alert. You should go listen to Ken's podcast, which is called Hollywood and Levine. You can listen to find the podcast and watch and look at the blog at kenlevine.blogspot.com. And you do mention that there are 6 movies of the list you actually wrote. I'm not going to give all of them away, but they are as diverse as Blazing Saddles and Road to Morocco. And that's all you need to know about Ken's sense of humor. I mean, the last question.
Those are the movies I recommend. I didn't write those.
You didn't write any of the Road movies?
No.
Okay.
No, Road to Morocco is 1942, Hank.
Okay. You're actually about 10 years older than I am, so I think that's not 1942.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I mean, just last...
I wrote Birth of a Nation back in 1911.
That was a huge laugh blast. you're writing mostly play. You're writing a lot of plays now. I mean, is it difficult?
Yes.
Is it difficult to write comedy when you are, when everything around this is going on around you?
To be honest with you, no. It's very therapeutic because it allows me for a couple of hours to kind of go into my own world and to concentrate on my characters and my situation and basically put it aside, what's really happening in the world. So for me, it's, like I said, it's very therapeutic.
Okay. Well, you're talking to a guy who's watched two and a half men marathons in the last 4 days. So I know you didn't write that either. Very funny show.
No, God, you sat through Two and a Half Men. You binge watched Two and a Half Men. Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. Yeah, yeah. Oh, believe it or not.
Cheers, Frasier.
Exactly.
Seinfeld.
Well, yeah, and I think I've told you my significant other is such a huge Frasier fan that when I introduced her to you, I thought she was going to go all kind of crazy fan, and you'd have to get a restraining order. Fortunately, she restrained herself. The blog is called by Ken Levine. The podcast is called Hollywood and Levine. You can find it at kenlevine.blogspot.com. There's all sorts of good stuff on there. There's links to the books he's written. You can get a free download of his banjo music. Anything you'd want to do. I mean, he's a great follow. Your Twitter is just at Ken Levine, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Ken, thank you so much for taking the time.
You know, my pleasure. And let me just say, even though I'm down in Los Angeles, good luck to the Giants. I hope you guys have a great season. You have a great ballpark. You have great announcers. I wish you guys nothing but the best.
All right. And I wish you the best in staying safe.
You too.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Giant Splash. I hope you and your families stay well. The Giant Splash is a production of the San Francisco Chronicle. Support the Splash and all of the Chronicle's great journalism by signing up for a Chronicle membership at sfchronicle.com/pod.